Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. As we wind down the regular season and start to put the gear away for next year or ramp up for the new season of the playoffs, I want to take some time to reflect on our great game and the privilege we have of coaching it. I watch social media, Twitter, Facebook groups, LinkedIn, and I see more and more coaches letting the tougher part of the job get to them. We're giving too much of our attention to those who want to see our game go away. The reports in the media are certainly focused more on what they believe are the dangers of the game. Legislators and politicians are getting involved, and it can be frustrating, but honestly, it's a huge opportunity to do our jobs the right way and show everyone why this game matters and what it can do. Our game has seen so many changes, whether it's the proliferation of the RPO, the focus on hybrid defenders, high-tech equipment, cutting-edge tech, all of those things have helped to make the game more exciting to coach, play, and watch. Rule updates have put a major focus on player safety and our mentality to how we coach the contact components of the game, blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling. Those are not only safer, but they're more effective than what we were teaching before. Drills have been banished because they didn't have player safety at the heart of them, and that actually was a good thing as well, and allowed us to find a better way to teach what we felt those drills were training in our players. As a note, I did a podcast on that and the adjustments and better drills prior to the season, and we will link that in our show notes. Now, in monitoring the attitudes on social media, there are those of us who want to hang on to the past. They are saying again and again that the game is getting soft, kids are getting soft, our society is getting soft, and really, I disagree with that. Yes, there have been things that have changed recently, but I will say that any young man who steps onto the field, by definition, is tough. He has the courage to play a game which more and more people want to get on their soapbox about and try to tear apart. This is something that kids didn't have to face before. They didn't have all the fears being put in their mind with the media. I think a kid today who steps out on that field probably is tougher than his counterpart, 50 or 100 years ago. These boys are willing to give their time and dedicate their minds, hearts, and bodies to go out and represent their communities every Friday night. And they deserve coaches who are approaching their work with enthusiasm, with their full focus on doing everything in their power to create an experience that these players can carry into their lives when they walk off the field and hang up their cleats. This is something that hasn't changed over the decades. And today I want to share the words of two iconic coaches. Coaches who affected this great game in a way that their words still inspire those who coach and play it. The first coach is Newt Rockne. In 1925, he published a book called Coaching. In our world of information, we can go out and get anything at any time, and there's so many good things out there, but I would still encourage anybody who's coaching to find this book and read it cover to cover. Rockne understood how to coach. He was and still is one of the best ever. His written word, which is almost a century old, holds true today. Here's what he has to say about our profession and the job we do. This is from his book. A coach must study pedagogy and be able to give out facts in such a simple and clear way that men can assimilate them. Put your information across slowly and repeat over and over again. Take a difficult point and study how to make it so simple that it will become palatable mentally, even to the dullard. You must be able to weigh values to a nicety. Know what to stress and pay particular attention to it. Know what to gloss over lightly. This is what distinguishes a good coach from a poor one. Some coaches are always stressing the unimportant things and passing by the big things. Keep everything simple and particularly stress the fundamentals. Do not give much credit to the star who carries the ball, but give the credit to the men who knock out of the way the potential tacklers. Develop a tradition of blocking and tackling at your school. Later in the chapter, he writes, "There have been objections from some academic men that football is all wrong. They say that 22 men playing a game of football do not help the character or muscles of the thousands of students gathering to watch them play. However, I have noticed that in those schools where they have successful athletics, that the entire student body takes more exercise, that a larger percentage go in for the minor sports than in those schools where they have unsuccessful athletics. A man develops his mind and the control of it and the discipline of it in his academic work, but the athletic field is the big laboratory of experimentation where the young man learns to discipline himself and experiments with himself against other men, mentally, emotionally, and physically. He learns lessons that cannot be taught in the classroom. I have never seen a football coach in recent years who did not insist upon academic work first and always insisted that the academic work was the most important. There is no narrowness in our profession. There are, however, a few men in the academic world who, because of narrowness of vision or because of irritability at their inefficiency in their own work, take time to knock athletics. They are wasting their time, however, as most thinking people realize that athletics is an integral part of the curriculum at any school which believes in graduating men. As our attention has been grabbed by those who are attacking the game, maybe our time is better spent returning our focus to what Rockne defines as good coaching and the real purpose of our jobs, to develop men. The next coach is an icon as well. Paul W. Bear Bryant wrote a book in 1960 titled Building a Championship Football Team. Like the words of Rockne, nothing could be truer about the purpose of our profession. He concluded his book with a chapter titled Those Who Stay Will Be Champions. What he accomplished in 1956 was something that few thought could be done when he took the job in 1954. Here's the chapter. Those who stay will be champions. Quitting comes easy for many people. Many do not want to pay the price to be a winner. It requires little effort to be a loser, and anyone who tries can be most successful. The solid citizens who finish my course will be better as a result of having stuck it out. The boy who sets his mind to do what is required of him in order to be a winner is not only the type of boy we are looking for, but he will get the most from the program. Those who stay will be champions and will become winners, not only on the football field, but in life itself. Walter D. Whitney's poem about a person's state of mind has a great deal of meaning to it. We have the poem posted in various places throughout our building so our boys can read it from time to time. The poem is as follows. It's all a state of mind. If you think you are beaten, you are. If you think you dare not, you won't. If you like to win, but don't think you can, it's almost a cinch you won't. If you think you'll lose, you're lost. For out in the world you'll find, success begins with a fellow's will. It's all a state of mind. For many a game is lost ere even a play is run, and many a coward fails ere even his work is begun. Think big and your deeds will grow. Think small and you'll fall behind. Think that you can and you will. It's all a state of mind. If you think you are outclassed, you are. You've got to think high to rise. You've got to be sure of yourself before you can ever win a prize. Life's battles don't always go to the stronger or faster man, but sooner or later the man who wins is the fellow who thinks he can. Bryant continues, we must inspire our boys to the degree they think and know they are capable of doing what it takes to win. Teaching the boys how to accomplish this is extremely gratifying and one of the rewards of coaching. From time to time, I've been asked, Coach, what has been your greatest thrill as a football coach? Trying to single out the greatest thrill, or even one of my greatest thrills as a coach, is very difficult for me to do. The game of football has been thoroughly rewarding to me. I recall one thrill in particular. The day our 1956 team at Texas A&M defeated the University of Texas 34-21 in Austin. You like to win them all, but the real thrill is the story behind this particular game. It actually started in the spring of 1954 when I first went to Texas A&M. The Aggies had not won the Southwestern Conference Championship in 15 years. We hoped to remedy this situation in time, so we commenced building our program that spring. In the fall, we took our players to Junction, a small place in South Texas, for preseason training. The work was hard and the weather was hot, and many boys dropped to the wayside. Many did not want to pay the price to be a winner. That fall, I imagine those who had not remained for early season practice felt they had made a wise decision since we won only one football game. Those who stayed, although beaten in every game except one, seemed more determined than ever to prove their point. They fought their hearts out in every game, and although beaten, they won the admiration and respect of everyone for their courage. While it was disappointing to lose, I felt deep down in my heart if those boys stayed, they would be champions by the time they were seniors. The following year, we had a good team, but we lost the final game of the season to the University of Texas, and with it, we lost the conference championship. So close, yet so far, was the elusive championship and a victory over Texas. From the beginning of the 1956 season, the determination of the senior group was evident. Consequently, we went into the final game of the season with Texas and Austin undefeated. There was more to it than just a mere football game. The Aggies had not beaten the University of Texas in Austin for a period of 33 years. In fact, they had never beaten Texas in Memorial Stadium, the site of the 1956 battle. The afternoon of November 29, 1956, could mean a great deal to this group of boys who started setting their sights at Junction in 1954. The public was aware of the fact that these boys could win the Southwest Conference Championship, have an undefeated season, and break the jinx at Memorial Stadium. They were probably not aware the stakes were higher. These boys had a chance to prove to themselves that they were men, that they could and would do what it takes, no matter how tough it may be, to become champions. The greatest thrill was not in the final score, 34-21. The thrill was watching those boys work, grow, and develop, and rise from a season in 1954 where they only won one game to an undefeated season in 1956. These boys paid the price to become champions. They were champs then, and they will always be champions because they know, understand, and are willing to do what they must do to be successful. The boys who started at Junction as sophomores are as follows: Don Watson, Lloyd Hale, Jack Pardee, Gene Stallings, Bob Keith, Dennis Gehring, Dee Powell, and Bobby Lockett. As for the boys who dropped out because the going was too tough, who can remember their names? For out in the world you'll find success begins with a fellow's will. It's all a state of mind. Wow, that's a pretty powerful chapter, and you see in that example what this game does. I mean, it really comes to life in how Bryant described that and what those boys went through and what it means to stay and see things out till the end. Bryant's words are so important. Those who stay will be champions. Our job is to create something in our communities that everyone can look to for inspiration, for examples of hard work and dedication, for a commitment to a process. I hope everyone is having or had a great 2019 season. I highly encourage you to go back through the Leadership Journey series that I do with Brian Kite. As we finish our third season of the series, we focused more and more on helping the individual coach and provide opportunities for reflection and growth in our profession. That's really what that series is about. I want to thank everyone for being listeners and supporters of this podcast. We're finishing up our third year of it, and I know that there are plenty of shows that have popped up, but I promise that at Coaching Coordinator, we're going to continue to connect with the best coaches around the country at every level, subject matter experts to learn from, and to help you grow in this profession. So if there's anything you need, please reach out to us. Follow us on our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEV Coach, and let me know what ideas you'd like to learn about or hear more about in this coming offseason. Contact me on Twitter, DM at Coach K Grabowski, or email me at kgrabowski@usafootball.com. Be sure to check out our systems for all phases of contact. Feel really good about what we've put together with that. Those are for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling, and you can find those at footballdevelopment.com. We have our free shoulder tackle system there, and by signing up with your email, you get access to 3 free videos, and we are constantly adding to that library. Again, I feel it's the best and safest way in all phases of contact. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate, or if you have a minute, write a review. We appreciate it, and it helps the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.